welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you so much, Tony, and good evening to everybody. Thank you for joining us on another rainy evening here in Washington, D.C., as we bring to you Celebrating Truth, and it's brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women. Our Celebrating Truth's producer is Miss Clem Clark out in San Francisco, where I understand the weather isn't any better today. It's raining out there a lot. I even heard from Dick Gregory, who got caught up in the weather out there. I believe he's on his way back to Washington now. Well, at any rate, we're always happy to bring this program to you every Monday, where we do celebrate truth. We celebrate truths you don't often hear about on mainstream media, but we make sure you hear about them here. And we ask you to don't forget to follow us on Twitter at CTruthProducer. That's C, the letter C, T-R-U-T-H, producer. And, of course, our new Facebook Celebrating Truth fan app, Celebrating Truth. Okay, well, again, we want to welcome you to the program this evening, and we want to remind our listeners to not forget one of the main events of this year. That's right, the 2012 elections are well underway, and of course, the Republicans already campaigning 24/7. During the next several months, we will keep you updated with some challenges to voting in 2012, sort of like an orchestrated effort to prevent some of us from voting, such as those new voter ID requirements, challenges to students voting where they attend school, a decrease in early voting days, and all kinds of legislation and attempts to prevent people from voting rather than encouraging them to vote. At any rate, don't forget to register yourself or update your registration so that you won't have to be having your vote suppressed in this very critical year when we will be reelecting a president of the United States, who has had just a lot of things thrown at him. But we know he's been doing a great job, so don't forget to get registered. There's a lot going on, and you have the power to stop the intended effect of some of these voter suppression things. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, the number one organization dedicated especially to the needs of black women and their families. And we invite all of our listeners to visit our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. That's nationalcongressbwforblackwomen.org. You will find lots of great information there, including greetings by our First Lady, Michelle Obama, and great information straight from the White House to keep you updated on what's going on. Oh, I just wonder if you heard the president singing and sounding just like Al Green on Let's Stay Together. I'm sure it's on YouTube by now if you didn't hear it. That sounds like a great campaign theme for me for 2012. I don't know about the president and his team, but it sure sounds good to me. Let's Stay Together. Our guest for today is Chuck Hicks, a longtime friend. Well, not that long, but longtime friend, and one who shares a home state with me, and it's hard to believe that we're going to be discussing the subject we will talk about today, but believe it, it did happen just a week ago. Chuck is the son of a well-known gentleman known as the late Robert Bob Hicks of Bogalusa, Louisiana. He was one of our most important civil rights workers. And I want to say good evening to you, Chuck, and welcome to Celebrating Truth.
Thank you so much. Good evening.
Now, your family is a well-known civil rights family that risked a whole lot to make life better for so many of us, and we're so appreciative to you, your sister, and your family for keeping the name of your father alive. Tell us a little bit about your late father.
Well, my dad was Robert Bob Hicks, and he was one of the leaders of the civil rights movement in Bogalusa and the state of Louisiana. And I guess there are a couple things that are significant. I mean, there are a lot of things, but a couple things that stand out is one, that he is noted for being one of the founders of the Deacons for Defense and Justice in Bogalusa, for filing that chapter. And, of course, the original chapter came out of Jonesboro, Louisiana. and the deacons were a group of black men who formed together, came together with guns for self-defense. The idea was that they wanted to protect their community so that people, the Klan, other hate groups, whites, could not drive through and shoot and challenge or threaten their families. So they began to arm themselves for self-protection. Of course, my father was able to orchestrate some legislation that I had nationally set, Hicks versus Crown-Zellerbach, which was a piece of legislation ruling that forced them to integrate during the time in factories, that they were forced to integrate all the cleanup areas. Even once they started to hire blacks, blacks were getting promotions, they still had separate cleanup areas. Blacks had theirs and whites had theirs. And so he filed a suit called Hicks versus Crown-Zellerbach, and it's a landmark case that they now use in law school. He also was active in filing a complaint with the housing department that forced them that they couldn't just put public housing in any neighborhood without coming through the community and having a discussion and making people aware in a give-and-take situation. Many years ago, they always just decided to put public housing wherever they decided, irregardless of what the community felt about it. So that was another piece of legislation that had national effect. And, of course, his family, as well as him, they integrated a number of facilities in Louisiana, including schools in Bogalusa, as well as he filed a suit about employment and job discrimination in the plant in Bogalusa and became the first black supervisor in Bogalusa. So those are some of the things that he did.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Chuck, when the civil rights movement first started, black people were not even asking for many of the things that your father went on to work for. They were just mainly asking for dignity, to be treated with dignity and respect. Right. And there were some people who thought that was too much, you know. So many things have happened since your father worked. And, you know, I was pleased to have heard about your father, even though I didn't know him personally, but I did know A.Z. Young from Bogalusa, the late A.Z. Young, I should say, who was very actively involved in a campaign.
Yeah, my dad was part of a team.
Yes.
Yeah, they were close friends and part of a team.
He was
the president of the union at the paper mill, and my dad was the president of the union at the box factory.
So he
became president of the Bogalusa Voters League. My dad was vice president.
Yes, they were together for a long time and some very good causes. And I heard about your dad through former Congressman Mervyn Dimely, who at the time, I believe, was in either the Senate or Lieutenant Governor or in some office in California, and heard about what was going on there. And like many other black men, drove to Bogalusa all the way from California because they wanted to be a part of what your father and the other men were doing there, that they were standing up for what was right, for justice for all of the people. So you should be very proud of your father, and as I'm sure your family is very proud of him.
I'm extremely proud of my dad in so many ways because my dad was one of the things that a lot of people don't realize that he was incredibly passionate about the fight for women and their equality. He did not see, believe, and understand how if a woman was doing the same job as a man, black or white, while she had to receive less pay. And he was passionate about that fight. So his issues were not only civil rights, they were human rights and equal rights to everybody.
Yeah, well, like you and your sister, your dad, and so many who fought for the rights of our people, especially in the state of Louisiana, because, you know, our state just seems to have been so far behind in so many things.
Our state was the state that claimed the capital of the Klan, and Bogalusa was the capital, and the state was the national capital. Bogalusa was the Klan capital of the South, Louisiana was, and within that, Bogalusa was the home base.
Well, you know, I'm not going to even suggest that over in Repeat's Parish things were a whole lot different, but perhaps not quite in the same way that Bogalusa treated black people in that area. But you probably will remember that when I was back in my home state, which is your home state, Louisiana, and sometimes I'm embarrassed to claim it, but, you know, that's where I was born. If you'll remember, many years ago, I ran for the United States Congress there and was one of the first of us to run for Congress. And let me tell you, that was an experience. I don't know how much you've heard about it, but one of the things that happened to me, just to give you an idea what it's like, I mean, no matter how little education somebody had, how, you know, poor they were, they still thought that they were better than black people. And I'll tell you about one incident, and then we're going to move on to talk a little bit more about what has happened with your family in Bogalusa. But as I ran for Congress, I can remember speaking at a rally and having this elderly white gentleman walk up to me and say, "Young lady, that was about the best speech I ever heard, but it must be awfully difficult to have all that education and still be colored." So that's an example, you know, of their telling you.
Absolutely amazing. That's almost as good as the one that was this white woman. And there's a picture of it in some of the books. And there's a sign she holds up, and she says, as the marchers are passing by, "Nigga, don't you wish you were white?"
if only they knew. I mean, when you think about all the soul, this beautiful spirit that we have in the black community, all we want is dignity, equality of opportunity, and that's what your dad and people like A.Z. Young and others were fighting for. And as a result of your father's work, you know, I know your family has some unbelievable situations that have happened to them. So just bring us up to date. I know that you've had a problem with your family home before. Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Well, this is, the first time my parents' home burned down, we just assumed it was some, they said the causes were unknown. And of course, we didn't think much about it, to say. Except that maybe it was lightning or electrical or something like that. But this time...
And how long ago was that?
That was about, 4 years ago.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But about this time, on the eve of Martin Luther King's birthday, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, there was an attempt to burn my parents' house down again.
So your parents had rebuilt the home?
Yes, they rebuilt on 7 pieces of property.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister heard a loud bam, bamming at the door. And so when she got up, she saw that her car, which was in front of the house, was set on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they called. She ran and got a neighbor and called my mom, and they tried to put it out. And soon the fire department came, and they put it out. And the next day, they were... Well, one of the comments that was made was that your dad was an activist or a protester, troublemaker.
So who made that comment?
I think she said that was made by one of the firemen.
My goodness!
She said, you know, so what's your take on that? And so she said, "Now let me correct you. My dad was a protector." You know,
mm-hmm.
And that he protected black people and organized black people so they could protect their families and their homes.
And you mean they said this just as early as this past Monday? This is still, that kind of talk is going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so and my mom had been selected to be the Grand Marshal for the Martin Luther King Parade, and it was being honored in Bogalusa mm-hmm. for the parade.
Mm-hmm.
And so... when they were going to get her, when some friends came by to pick her up, their husband and wife, but they were tall. They're about 6'5" or so. And so when they looked upon they saw the house, they saw the roof, and they mm-hmm. said, Miss Hicks, somebody tried to burn you. Not only did they burn the car up, that's where the roof, they tried to burn, the roof is burned. And so they notified the fire people. They went up and looked and found that there were two spots where they had thrown I don't know if it was gasoline or rag or whatever that tried to burn the house. But
mm-hmm.
it burned, but it didn't ignite, so it didn't catch. And so they called in. They smelled it and determined that there's no way that that car burning could have affected the roof. So eventually they called in some chemical dogs from Baton Rouge, and they were able to sift and determine not only that they used gasoline, but that they had poured gasoline around the house to try to set it on fire, and on the roof. And when that wasn't successful, of course, they took and doused the car with gasoline that set the car on fire, I guess hoping that maybe it would explode and then ignite the house. But that didn't happen.
Now, the first fireman who came, that was the local city or parish fireman?
Yes, I remember.
And then,
yes.
Well, who had...
They brought in the state fire chief.
Mm-hmm. And who was responsible for that?
They labeled it a hate crime. Now, we certainly believe that it was a racially motivated hate crime, but that's a process before they can actually do that. What they did, what they were able to do, was to label it a hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal has been, of course, to try to get as many people involved in this investigation as possible. So let you know, many times that things that happen on the local level, if they're not up a notch or two in terms of state and federal level, that they get little attention or no attention, or they just sort of lay stagnant. And with my mom's being 82 and my sister being mid-60s and living in a house alone, you know, we used to believe that they should have to endure that kind of lack of protection or investigation.
Mm-hmm. Is the Justice Department involved in the investigation yet?
We have, the FBI is there as an attempt to make sure that we try to reach out to Eric Holder, to the Civil Rights, the National Civil Rights Organization, because things work, as you know, sister, say, sometimes things work a lot better when the people at the top take an interest in it. Of course, when there is just people at a local level doing an investigation. So we believe and hope that as much attention that can be brought to this, through, of course, the black press, because we don't believe that much of the main media will pick it up. That, of course, through national organizations such as yours and the connection that the National Black Congress of Women have in terms of their connections, and the new social media that has been so important, and that is emails, Twitter, and Facebook. I tell people all the time is that there is a new day and a new mechanism. So often during the civil rights movement, we had all we had was the telephone. And, of course, when we had the telephone in small towns, they had operators so they could disconnect you. The first time I, during the civil rights movement, when they were, we were integrating during the days of testing in Bogalusa, and chief of police came down and tried to put the civil rights workers out of our house. And my dad said no, and he said no, and initially my mother said no, and I once asked her why she said no. She said because she was thinking of those boys in Mississippi, Charlie Goodman and Swartz, and she's always said that I'm a mother, and I just felt so sorry for the mothers of those kids, and I couldn't imagine anybody putting my sons out, and I couldn't put anybody else's sons out in a situation like that. And when that all happened, and when the chief of police told my dad that he had 26,000 people in Bogalusa to protect, and he didn't have time to be fooling with poor white trash and niggers, and he was not going to give us any protection, and that house and the family would not be alive, or the house would be standing by morning, by 5 o'clock the next morning, and all we had was a telephone. And to make calls and to people, to black men, to tell them to bring their guns and to come and protect it, because Klan mob was coming, they lynched us and burned the house down, and burned my family. I was away in school. Eventually, they turned the phones off. They cut our phones off. And not only did they cut our phones off, eventually when black people were calling each other, they turned all the phones off to the black community.
Well, this is so that you couldn't communicate with each other and maybe plan any response. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, we were a close community, so black men were there. And when by the time they did get a call out to New Orleans, to the press and to the media, and when they got there that morning, they saw those black men with guns, and they said, who are these men? And my dad said, these are the deacons for the sense of justice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But my point is that they controlled so much of the communication back then. You know, they wouldn't print a story. in a newspaper, the newspaper, you know, if somebody was a marcher, when they shot into our houses, well, the daily papers didn't print it. So it was, communication was limited in terms of how you could get the word out. But today we have an incredible media, and that's the Internet. That's, you can email, you could text, you could Twitter, you know, you got YouTube, you got all these wonderful avenues that can get a message out. And I'm reminded, as you know yourself, that one of the amazing things, the two differences between the Million Man March and the Million Women's March was that the Million Man March, because of the Minister Farrakhan and their endorsement of it and a lot of other groups, we did flyers that was on radio and all of this. But the Million Women's March, or Women's March, was done primarily by black women emailing to each other, turned out a million black women. And I've always said that, you know, that's the sign that you don't, money is not the most important thing. That with the social media, the information technology we have today, there's no reason why we can't bring to bear the pressure that we need to bring to bear on any kind of issue. And I'm reminded, I know I'm talking a lot, but I'm reminded of a situation here in Washington when they were talking about over on 8th Street. They were talking about the train of putting in the new trolleys, the train trolleys that they're going to put in. And they were looking at the budget. And Mayor Gray said something about having to take the money out of the budget for the train, for the trolleys that's going to run down 8th Street. And he got so many emails from certain communities about, we need that here. That money went back into the budget. And so the lesson there is that as with our young people and all of us who have access to emails and Twitter and Facebook, we need to make use of that as a political tool. You know, to let people know where we stand on issues.
Exactly.
And when we don't do that, you know, that's not an elected official, that's not a committee person, that's not a senator or a congressperson or anybody who does not have modern-day technology. And what we do is we complain and don't send a message.
Well, you know, Chuck, there is a principle in law that says, you know, silence gives consent. So when we're not saying anything, it's just as if we were saying we support this. For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to Celebrating Truth, and we're talking with Chuck Hicks. Chuck and I are both from Louisiana, and most recently there was a despicable act in Louisiana against his family by burning up the family car, which I understand belonged to your sister but had been purchased for her by your dad, which made it a very special car. And then there's some belief that even there were attempts to burn down their home yet another time after they rebuilt it. So those of you who are listening, listeners, get on your Facebook, get on your Twitter, get on your email, and tell people about this, especially news media people that you know, because this has certainly not been covered. But that's all right. We're going to get it covered. I know that you were on WPFW this morning with my friend Joni, Joni, and I know that she's been getting the word out there. So we are going to do this. We're going to get the word out there.
You called in, and a number of people called in, including...
Yes, Dick Gregory, Marion Barry, just so much.
Of course, my family is just so honored and humbled by the support that it's gotten from some of the people who call in, because we recognize that for the people who call in, and there probably would have been many others, but the people who did call in and the positions and things that they held, that they recognize the importance of what this means not only to us, but that this could happen to anybody. And unfortunately, that it happened to a family that was somehow recognized in terms of its contribution, and so there can be some protection. But it also means that everybody is, you know, everybody can be a threat, you know, that everybody can be put in this position. And if they chose to get somebody who could not get the kind of attention that we're getting, that if we can't make the government and elected officials let people know that if you do this, we will track you down, we will find you, and we will chastise you for this. Then we're all vulnerable, you know. The little man on the street he becomes vulnerable. Those people who are public assistants, they could have done anything. There was an incident. I don't know what the particular incident was, but there was something that happened in either North Carolina or South Carolina this week during Dr. King's celebration. Two women at my church were talking about that. Well, you know, about the thing that happened in North Carolina. I think it was North Carolina. And I'm not sure what the incident was, but what it says is that these incidents are happening and that this is probably not an isolated incident, that there's lots of people who are still experiencing, you know, racial or hate discrimination. And so we have to stand up and be really vigilant about not letting this happen and not letting people get away with this.
Yeah, and you know, you notice, Chuck, how those who are campaigning for the highest office in the land are putting in out there and spewing a lot of the hate that's causing people to respond to that hate by carrying it on. And I think this is probably very related to what's going on. I mean, these people who are running for office right now have, you know, just, I know they have to know what all of the hate they're putting out there, what effect that is happening on people who may not be stable, you know, to say the least, that's being kind to say not stable, but people who don't know any better, people who are prone to act based upon the hatred they're hearing these candidates do. So, you know, somewhere somebody needs to speak out and tell them they've got to stop this silliness. And I'm talking about the Republican candidates in the primary right now. Now, has anyone been arrested for what happened?
No, they have not. They are just beginning the investigation. And that's where we think is so important is that in terms of being able to get in touch with civil rights organization and the Attorney General's office and the state legislature and for Congress members and senators to call to inquire the status of the situation in Bogalusa. I know, as well as many of us know, that when a situation is looked at from the top, it gets a lot more attention than when it's just looked at in a local level.
And, exactly.
I think the situation merits that kind of attention, but it also says that when something of this nature happens, that we are aware of it, that people will look into it, it will also send a message that if you do it, not only will it be looked at from a local level, but we will let everybody know about this.
Well, one of the things, Chuck, I know that this is on short notice that you came on, and we didn't have an opportunity to notify a lot of people that you would be on, but all of our shows are archived, and you can let your friends, family, and others know that they can hear the details of this by going to artistfirst.com, just A-R-T-I-S-T, first, F-I-R-S-T.com. And usually in a day or two, it's up on our website where you just go to artistfirst.com. Click on either my name or Celebrating Truth, and they can hear a replaying of the details. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And when we come back, I want you to tell our listeners what they can do to help in this situation and tell us a little bit about the foundation that's been formed honoring the work of your father.
Okay.
We'll be right back. This program is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women.
Listening to Celebrating Truth on the Artist First Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire.
Thank you again, Tony, and welcome back to Celebrating Truth. We're talking with Chuck Hicks, where there was a tragedy in his family, one that you just can hardly believe would happen. But if you have just joined us, there'll be an opportunity for you to go to the archives at artistfirst.com. That's artist, A-R-T-I-S-T, first.com, and click on Celebrating Truth or my name, Dr. E. Faye Williams, and you can hear the details. But Chuck, we were just about to talk about the what our listeners could do to help in the situation and your family foundation and how we can participate in that.
Well, one of the things, of course, that people can do is to spread the word, and you can do that by email, you can do that by Twitter, you can do that by Facebook, and you can certainly contact the Justice Department, Civil Rights Division, your congresspersons, or senator, U.S. national as well as local members of your state legislatures, and ask them to investigate or make sure that this is a thorough investigation that's going on. We believe that the more people who know about this, that the better off we are, better chances we have for a thorough investigation, and that we will create and be able to pass out to people an update in terms of the status of this investigation as it moves forward. It is so important that we know that Eric Holder hears about this and that he takes an interest in it. I'll make sure that he's informed about it. Those are the kinds of things that send a message to people throughout this country that not only can you not get away with it in Bogalusa, Louisiana, but you can't get away with it in California, North Carolina, South Carolina, New Mexico, South Dakota. Wherever there is injustice, that you know it will be fought, not only in terms of civil rights, but in terms of human rights.
Yes. Now, about the foundation, tell us a little bit about that and how we can contribute to that foundation.
Our foundation has been set out called the Robert Bob Hicks Foundation for Human Rights and Civil Rights. And, of course, one of the things that we try to do in that foundation is we use it as an educational tool, a piece so that we can educate young people, both black and white, and particularly in the black community, about racism and also about their history and things that have happened, so that they'll be able to, one, understand racism, identify it, and be able to deal with it, but also to recognize the contributions that blacks have made in the struggle for them to be able to try on shoes, to walk into a restaurant and sit down and eat, to you know, just go any place they feel like they can go. One of the challenges, of course, is that oftentimes our young people are so involved in just receiving the benefits that are there that when things happen to them, they don't even understand it because they were not made aware that there is still racism. Mm-hmm. You know, that when they are out someplace and all of a sudden some old white person or man or somebody of a come in and call them a nigger, a mama nigger under the breath, or if they go into a store and they'll watch and people walk behind them as soon as they walk in, they say, can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you need some help? Those are signs.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, sometimes we just think that people are being courteous. They walk behind you and say, yeah, well, can I help you find something? Is there something you need, like your handicap, you know, that you don't know this? You know, when you go to a bank and they ask you for 3 IDs, or you go someplace and they want 2 IDs, and if you look around, they only get one from somebody else, or maybe none. But those are signs that you have to be aware of. And as you said, this whole idea, for example, of what they're doing with this voting rights thing now, where they want people to have IDs. The truth of the matter is that at least 30% of black people don't have IDs. You know,
right.
Don't have picture IDs.
Yes. As a matter of fact, many black people don't even know when they were born, and that's not their fault. That was the fault of the system that existed at the time they were born. I know my mom only has her christening certificate from the church.
Right. And so if you go someplace and they say, you can't vote unless you show us an ID, and you can't get an ID unless you can prove that you live in that town or that you have 3 or 4 different types of papers. You got something from the Social Security, you got something from the city, you got, you know, and many of us didn't finish high school. So these are obstacles that are put in front of us, and young people need to understand those things. But there are a whole bunch of young people who don't have IDs. You know, they walk around and they don't have an ID, they haven't gotten one, and before you know it, you're out of high school, and you don't have an ID, and life goes on, and you end up doing this or that, and then you're 25 or 30 without an ID.
Mm.
Then you go to vote, and they tell you, well, you can't vote. We can't let you vote unless you have an ID.
Yeah.
When you're 30 years old, you got to either go prove that you went to school or you were born or whatever.
And then plus it's costly to try to figure out how to get a birth certificate, particularly for someone who has never had one. They don't know how to do it or where to call or to go.
Frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, that for those of us who've been lucky enough to finish high school or go off to college, well, we can manipulate or deal with the system a lot easier than people who have not. And even for young, young black people, and particularly young black boys, we know how the system is treating them. We know that there are more blacks in jail than in college, and so we know the problems that those individuals are facing, and so it becomes very frustrating. And when you get frustrated, you do what? You give up.
Yeah.
And so there you
are.
Well,
that's the whole intent of it, to suppress the vote. I want to ask you a couple more questions about local officials. What's been the response of local officials, even the governor? Has he made a statement? Any local officials made a statement about what happened at your home?
I have not heard if the governor has made a response, but I would be surprised if he would have, because I think... he's a Republican governor, and that just doesn't automatically make you a racist because you're a Republican. But I know he is not seeing Mogadishu and the Zikas in a positive light as such, and understanding what they were about. Ben Nevis has reached out to my mother, and some of the city people have reached out to my family and offered their assistance, and the sheriff-elect... in terms of saying whatever he can do, that he will reach out to Mary Landry, our senator. And I know that there's been an attempt to reach out to her, but a lot more support is needed in terms of reaching out and making people aware so that we get the kind of attention that we need. But as I said, the whole idea of the Robert Bob Hicks Foundation is to educate young people and other adults in terms of the roles and contributions that the civil rights movement has made to make people aware of the problems that you face in terms of racism, and also that there's a need for equality for women, for other minorities in this country, that none of us are free until all of us are free. And that,
right.
Of course, is a true saying, is that as long as one person is free, it's not free all of us.
Yeah.
Well, women, Latinos, African Americans, the problem still exists.
Yeah, I didn't mean to leave off with get away with just asking about the Republicans. What about Senator Mary Landrieu? She represents the entire state. Have you heard from her?
I know that there's been a call put into her this week.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are two people now. I'm not in direct contact with my family, but I know that her office has been contacted.
I see.
And we're going to follow up on that.
Yeah, well, she should be making a statement, and she should be pushing. She should be going to the Justice Department. The same with the congressman from the Bogalusa area. We have to make sure that somebody is contacting them. And those of you who are listening, you can do this just as well as the Hicks family is doing it. Now, I don't expect Senator Vitter to have any concern, but, I just...
Senator Landrieu, we would expect.
Yes, of course, yes.
I just believe that she will respond.
Mm-hmm. Now, I realize it's been a relatively short time since this has happened, but certainly the United States Senator.
You make a good point, Sister Faye, that this is a massive effort, and whoever and wherever people can make an input, it certainly is appreciated. As I say, my mother's 82 years old, so her abilities to deal with this kind of situation is limited. And my sister is 60-something years old, and she's traumatized. And so, when I sometimes talk, I say, have you talked to this person? Have you made this call? I'll do this. She says, there's so much to do.
Yeah.
And I'm only one person. And one person cannot carry a movement. One person cannot carry a fight. You know, it's like it takes more than one. It takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a village to wage a fight for justice. And so you're absolutely right. We would hope that everybody would find a way to contribute. As you know, one of the things that we used to say in the movement is that everybody had a role to play, that find your niche and do that. Some people, I remember Nat King Cole would say, well, you know, I don't have the patience for watching, but I can certainly write a check. I can remember that there were certain people who, because of their jobs during the movement in Bogalusa, they couldn't march, but every morning they came down and brought a couple pounds of coffee, you know. And there were certain people who, because they worked for white people, they couldn't march or they were afraid to be seen, but every day they came back and they cooked the pot of collard greens to bring to the workers. So there are many ways that you can support a struggle. And that's not only in terms of just this situation, but in terms of all the challenges and fights that we are facing, that you need to just find your ditch and then make a contribution. You know, everybody won't be able to get on a radio program and talk. Everybody won't be able to look at it from a legal standpoint. But when you know something is wrong, you can find a way to help fight against that wrong. And that becomes important.
Well, let me ask you, is there anyone in Bogalusa who is looking out for your mom and your sister now? I'm just concerned about that and whether we need a whole new set of modern deacons for defense down in Bogalusa.
Well, you know, I think that there are people who are calling, and there are some friends who stopped by, and certainly the more people stop by, and there have been some who've spent a night or so, and that certainly gives my family some a sense of more security. But I think that the idea that it certainly is always helpful when there is a set of people who will say, we'll come by and say, or we'll drive by and check, you know, on a routine schedule basis, that helps to give people security on that. And that there is a group of people working to begin to put together some kind of organization to help do that.
Now, I just wonder if there are any white people in Bogalusa who've come forward to denounce this situation. Are you aware of any who've done that?
Yes, I am. There's the sheriff-to-be, Randy Seal. I think there have been a couple of the city council people, some of the parish council members who are white have come forth and said that we cannot let this happen. We will not begin to bring back this image of Bogalusa and Washington Parish as a parish and a city of hate, that we're going to do all we can to make sure that whoever did this is caught and brought to justice.
Let me ask you, were the people in Bogalusa also affected by the oil spill? I mean, is this like a double whammy?
A few. Most of that happened near New Orleans and Slidell. You know, we're not really near the water, Lake Pontchartrain. You know, that happened from Slidell and New Orleans and up in that area, and that part of Louisiana. Bogalusa was not directly affected by that.
Yeah. Well, I know that Dick Gregory and Art Rocker
right.
from Florida and I have been working on this situation. We've traveled all over the area, and I know that, you know, there are many people who are still hurting, so we can't forget about them either.
No, because one of the situations we have in Louisiana with that whole thing is that while corporations have been subsidized and taken care of, the individual families are in dire straits. You know,
yes.
They lost their jobs, and there's been no supplemental checks, or there were only a few supplemental checks, but they reinstated the corporations and the big companies.
The casinos?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, those places. But for the persons who were dependent, you know, were been out of work, that they not gotten those supplemental checks. That is a major fight and a major hurt for lots of people.
Okay, then, Chuck, we're just about out of time, but our prayers go with your family, and you will be praying for the safety of your mother and your sister, and not just for their safety, but for their comfort. I assume they're planning to continue living there. They're not going to allow anybody to run them off.
No, well, you know, once you start to run and move, somebody says, oh, well, why don't they just move?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you know, that's the last thing you want to do is to start getting scared and running. I said, and besides that, you know, one of the sad things that happened with Katrina and that other situation in Mississippi and stuff is that the people who have worked all their lives, and you're 80 years old, you're 65 years old, and something happens and you lose your home and stuff, where do you go?
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to certainly thank Joni Eisenberg, our sister over at WPFW Pacifica, for bringing this situation to our attention.
And
all of us then need to be spreading the word.
Yes, and we're so happy to have you and your organization to be a part of this, because the people in your organization are such an effective group of women. And I'm always talking about, I was sharing with one of the guys at WPFW, just the power of women and black women, and how they can just latch in and stomp their heels down and stand strong. You think of women and you think of these fragile ladies and all of that, but women have an amazing amount of strength and courage and resilience. They are willing to endure pain and emotional stress in a much different way than many men do. And we know that when the role that women have played in this movement and in all struggles have made a world of difference. I oftentimes say that, you know, many of the situations have been changed because women took a stand on a situation. And when women take a stand, they're determined. And so we are, you know, I'm, as always, you know, you have been out here on the front line, and you have been a person who's been able to lead and to make a difference in so many people's lives. And we are just absolutely so grateful for your organization and all that you do, not only in terms of what you will do with this situation, but all the many things that you've done and will continue to do. And so we just say, you know, that nobody is free until we're all free. And through your organization and organizations such as yours and others, that we will change America. We will have that dream.
Thank you so much, Chuck. And let us pray that the Department of Justice will make this case a very high priority and find the culprits before they're able to harm somebody else. And for all of the black people in Bogalusa, I say to you, keep your eyes and your ears open, but never succumb to fear or to violence against others, or people just will think that it's okay to do the things they're doing. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you.
And we're going to a short break, and we'll be right back with our National Congress of Black Women's Member of the Week.
Welcome back to Celebrating Truth on the Artists First World Radio Network.
Thank you, Corey, and welcome back to Celebrating Truth. In these last few minutes of the program, we always like to honor one of our members who's doing great things in the organization. And if you'd like to join the great things that we do in our communities across the nation, let us know by calling us at 202-678-6788. Maybe you'd like to be a donor to some of our community service programs, and you can do that by going to www.nationalcongress.org.
www.cbw.org. And don't forget, when you come to Washington, D.C., to stop by the Capitol Visitor Center and see Sojourner Truth, the memorial that our members donated to Congress nearly 3 years ago. And now Sojourner Truth presides over Emancipation Hall. She's the first to be unveiled there, and she is the first black woman ever to have a permanent memorial in the United States Capitol anywhere. We celebrate women and all of their achievements every day, and we invite you to support our efforts by becoming a member of the National Congress or donating to some of our projects. And again, we like to end our program by saluting members of the National Congress of Black Women for the great work they do. This week's honoree is Ms. Bernice Odin, who is not only an officer in the National Congress, but also volunteers many, many, many hours to the success of the organization. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You, Dr. Williams?
Okay, and I want to salute you for the difference you make in your community, not just in the National Congress of Black Women, but what are some of the other organizations in which you work?
Okay, I belong to Kiwanis International, which is the Far East Club, and I've been a member for 25 years. I was one of the first females that joined that organization when they became, was eligible to receive membership in the organization.
Okay, and you're...
It was an all-male organization before.
Wow, okay then. And you're also a member of the Metropolitan District of Columbia chapter of the National Congress of Black Women. I know you've got an event coming up, so I want to ask you about that.
Okay, on March 17, 2012, from 12 to 4 p.m., we'll be celebrating our fifth Shirley Chisholm Trailblazer Luncheon at the Navy Yard. The tickets are $50. You can call me at 202-584-3186, and we have lots of tickets available. Please come out and celebrate our fifth anniversary for the Shirley Chisholm Trailblazers. And one of our special guests that's going to be honored is Mr. Oh, I shouldn't tell it probably.
Oh, go right ahead.
Mr. Dick Gregory, the comedian.
All right.
I'm sure he'll entertain us also.
All right. And it's people like you that make things happen in our communities all across the country. So our hat goes off to you today. And thank you so much and congratulations on being Member of the Week for the National Congress of Black Women.
Well, thank you, Dr. Williams. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And have a good
day. To our listeners, we encourage you to join as members of the National Congress of Black Women. When you look around your community and you think about community service at its best, we want you to think about women like Bernice Odin and others who have been Member of the Week. We want you to also know that that's the National Congress of Black Women, because we are truly women making a difference in our community. Join us by calling 202-678-6788 or going to our website, nationalcongressbw.org. Also, you can join us each Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Sirius XM Radio for the Mark Thompson Show, Make It Plain. I have the honor of co-hosting the Wednesday segment on women. And plan now to be with us for next year for our annual awards brunch, when we will again meet in Washington, D.C. on Sunday morning, September 23rd. 2012, following the Congressional Black Caucus. I know that many of you will be in town for that, so please think about coming by our luncheon and seeing all the wonderful things that we do and the wonderful people we honor. We always have a great time. We have a lot of great information on our website, too, so check out our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. And take a look at some of our projects like College for Kids and Young Ambassadors, sponsored by our friends at Comcast. We thank Southwest Airlines, Pepco, the Olin Law Firm, Goodyear Tire Company, President and First Lady Barack and Michelle Obama, Ms. Cicely Tyson, who is one of our big supporters, Secretary Bill Cohen and his wife Janet Langhart Cohen. They're some of our great and constant supporters, and we appreciate them so much for all that they do. I invite you to read some of my weekly news articles at www.nationalcongressbw.org, as well as in newspapers in your communities. If no paper in your community carries the articles from Trice Edney Wire Service, let us know, and we'll hook them up with Hazel Trice Edney and her wire service, which is an historical thing she is doing to have and African-American-owned wire service. On our site, you can also find firsthand information from the White House on numerous subjects. Again, we thank our listeners and our guests for spending this time with us on Celebrating Truth. And we're brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at CTruthProducer and join us on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com and type in Celebrating Truth. You'll find us there. Remember to check out the National Congress of Black Women and the great work we do around the country on our own website, and listen to Urban Radio 2000 while you're on our site. We have great music. If there's no chapter in your town, just give us a call at 202-678-6788. That's 202-678-6788, and we'll get you started. That's it for Celebrating Truth today. Have a blessed week and a happy, healthy, and prosperous New Year. We'll see you next week and invite your friends to join us every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.